We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Off and rolling Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman, Gabe Kuhn. On X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning929. Connor, what's the word?
What's up, man?
Nothing much, man. Looking forward to playing some ball tonight.
I'm getting in the zone.
Okay. Yeah, it's a hydrate up, brother.
Hydrate up. You see, I got my big Grizz water bottle.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. Get some water in you. I learned the hard way. What was it, last week or 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago. You're still limping.
Yeah. No, I was still limping until about two days ago. A little rolled ankle, that type of thing. Yeah, just it doesn't respond how it used to when I was like in my early 20s.
We aren't elastic anymore.
Yes. It doesn't work that way anymore. But we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on what I'm going to be honest with you. Last night was one of the more telling games of the Grizzly season that we've seen in a while, just because, you know, the injury report is not as big because Desmond Bain is playing now. And you got to see G.G. Jackson next to him. There's a lot of different things to sort of break down from last night's game as opposed to what we've been dealing with for a majority of the season. Now, did they drop one to the Kings? Sure. They lost an OT to the Kings, 121-111. And let's be honest, Domantas Sabonis absolutely kills the Grizzlies when he plays them, but he has been unbelievable. He's on like a 50-game, I believe, double-double streak. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Also, last night in the NBA, we'll have to talk about one of the best dunks, probably the dunk of the year, with Ant Edwards over John Collins. We have Tiger basketball recruiting targets that we'll discuss throughout the day. Memphis football starts spring practice. Start spring practice today. There we go. So I'll have some... we'll have some questions, some answers, some discussion along the way when it comes to Memphis football and what to expect coming out of spring. Obviously, we talked to Ryan Silverfield last week about it, and he was very truthful about, you know, after spring, there may be some guys get in the portal, but they're trying to retain the roster as well as possible. And they've done a good job of that thus far. But there's some guys they got on the transfer portal, you know, after the season that will get their first sort of run on the field with this particular team. And I'm curious to see what they have. As far as guests are concerned on today's show, Jeff Calkins will join at 5 o'clock to start hour number 2 from the Daily Memphian of the Jeff Calkins Show. And then 6 o'clock, as is customary on a Tuesday, we have Christian Fowler joining from Bluff City Media and the On the Bluff podcast. You can find that, me and him, every single Tuesday at noon it releases. And we talk Tigers and everything else. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. The Blitz will be at 6:30, and we have a lot of NFL to talk about. Of course, the Jets, I think, just signed Mike Williams not too long ago, 1 year, $15 million. But over the weekend, they did sign Tyron Smith, all-pro left tackle, former Cowboy, to a one-year deal worth up to $20 million. I think the guaranteed number is $6.5 million. But they are trying to strengthen that offense as much as they can with Aaron Rodgers returning to the lineup. The only thing that could derail it, and I'll mention this again later, is if Aaron Rodgers is the ultimate running mate for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But also, we're going to have to do some more J.J. McCarthy talk, Connor. You know, I don't get it. can I be honest? I just don't get it when it comes to J.J. McCarthy. I think he's a fine prospect. Is he worth a top 15 pick, though? I think that's absolutely insane. I think there's a couple of quarterbacks I can compare him to in recent years, and one in particular is with the Titans right now, and Will Levis. Why? What makes Will Levis at the top of the second round a first early day two pick and J.J. McCarthy a top 15 pick? What's the difference between those two guys? Is it strictly winning? Because I've seen a lot of winners in college football not amount to anything at the quarterback position in the NFL. Johnny Manziel was a winner. Jamarcus Russell was a winner. Mac Jones was a winner. And they have been nothing. They were nothing in the NFL. So in the end of the day, like, if you're just saying this guy's a absolute winner, you know, he's a good game manager and he manages games well. He's in a pro-style offense and he wins. What does that mean at the NFL level? Michigan had all the talent in the world when they went 15-0 and won a national championship. They had the best team on paper in the country, and we knew that going into the season. Wherever he lands in the NFL, that's not how that works. Other teams have talent. But I'll get to more of that when we get to the Blitz, because it's just getting nuts on me. Sorry to get on my soapbox there for a second. Now, Grizzlies drop one to the Kings in overtime, 121-111. It was a loss, but I thought it was a solid loss, and I thought I learned a fair amount about some of the guys playing next to Desmond Bane. And quite frankly, here's my truth from last night. Seeing last night, that's one of the reasons I am not in the same boat as a lot of people. Well, a lot of people will say, you know, you don't want to play Desmond Bane. You don't want to risk injury. He's already been injured a few times this year, but you don't want to risk what 2024-25 could be. I am of the opinion he could get an injury in off-season work. He could get an injury in practice. He could get an injury in a lot of places. If you play him for a fair amount of minutes, give him a little run at the end of this season, I don't really see that much of a risk. Obviously, I don't want him to play, you know, 30. He played 37 minutes last night because it was an overtime game. Don't want to see him play 37 minutes a night. But, you know, if you give him intermittent rest and you don't push it too much with him, I feel fine with it. And the reason I feel fine with it is because you get to see him alongside some of the guys we've seen. We'll see him with Vince Williams Jr. We'll see him with G.G. Jackson. And last night we saw him with G.G. Jackson. And how many open shots did we see G.G. Jackson get because of Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. and what they're able to do as far as forcing the defense to cover them, the gravity they have? G.G. Jackson had 22.7 rebounds, 8 for 13 from the field, 4 for 8 from 3 because of Desmond Bane being back on the floor. And you can say all you want about risking injury, but at the same time, you want to see some of these guys that the Grizzlies have discovered this year, Vince Williams Jr. and G.G. Jackson in particular, you want to see them alongside some of the mainstays that will be in this lineup, be on this roster going into the future. The future that you want to be a championship contending future. And this is why I want Desmond Bane to play some games, to see what G.G. Jackson, to see what Vince Williams Jr. can do next to them. And last night, I think we got a good little preview of it.
Yeah, if anything, it gives you a preview, too, about the potential of this team next season. Like, I understand that the Grizzlies have still been losing a lot of games recently, but when you have had G.G. Jackson out there with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane, you can see the potential there because you're seeing more of the regular rotation guys that the team plans to have in the rotation next season. And it's no surprise to anyone that when you have two all-star level guys like Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane out there, it's going to lead to just cleaner and more open shots for the younger guys. And they can really kind of show you what their role could potentially be on this team next year. You've talked about it a lot this season. Michael Porter Jr. is the comp that you have given G.G. Jackson for what his role could potentially be next year. You've not been saying that that's what his ceiling is.
Right.
You're just saying that the way that the Grizzlies could use G.G. Jackson could be very similar to how the Nuggets use Michael Porter Jr. And you kind of got to see that,
yes,
a little bit last night. He was very much a Michael Porter Jr.
13 shots
role.
And 8 of them from the three-point,
yeah,
line. And he knocked down 50%
just
from the three-point line.
Just stay ready
line.
And you're going to get an open shot. Because Desmond Bane, I think the most underrated part of his game is his ability to get to the basket and pass out. He is a really good drive and kick player. So when you have a three-point shooter like G.G. Jackson out there and Jaren Jackson Jr., they're going to get open open shots from Desmond Bane being out there. I can't lie. I had a ton of fun watching last night's game. Seeing Desmond Bane out there just makes my heart happy.
Yep.
That guy is an absolute hooper. And every single time I watch him play, I'm like, damn, I cannot believe the Grizzlies got that guy.
Yes. Now, I think there's a lot of questions. Now, how you know that more people are bought into a game is when you see Grizz Twitter react.
Oh, it was on fire last night.
It was on fire last night.
In good and bad ways.
Yes. And there was a lot of good ways, and I saw some like good projections of what G.G. Jackson could be. I also saw some interesting projections. And listen, with G.G. Jackson, you still have to understand he's 19. He's going to be 20 by the time he gets into next year. He still hasn't had a legal beer yet. Like, that's the truth of it. A legal beer, Connor. He gave me a look in here. I know you can't see into the studio, but he gave me a look. He hadn't had a legal beer yet. But looking at G.G. Jackson, a lot of people were talking about, since he was playing alongside Dez, where he would fit into next season and where he could fit into the future of these Grizzlies' plans. And I saw a lot of people saying, oh, why? What would keep him from starting next to this group? What would keep him from starting next to a full Grizzlies group? At the three or what have you, maybe a little bit at the four, depending on what they do with Jaren Jackson Jr. and they do with the five position. I think it's way too early to be talking about him starting alongside this lineup. And the reason I say that, it's not because of what G.G. Jackson has shown. I think G.G. Jackson, at some point in his career, has starting ability.
Oh, without a doubt.
But we have to see that develop continuously. But I think going into next year, even if he has starting ability, you still have to realize who's in that starting lineup and where the scoring's coming from. Where's the scoring coming from, Connor? It's not that hard. Ja, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. Do you need more scoring in the starting lineup, or do you need someone to play defense and be a defensive a perimeter guy, a guy that connects on the defensive end, a guy who connects on the offensive end? I think you need to worry about that more so than a guy like G.G. Jackson, who right now his biggest ability is scoring the ball, especially from the outside, from the three-point line. Yes, you could space the floor better if you have a guy who shoots 50% from three any given game. I understand that. But Vince Williams Jr. and Marcus Smart have shown the ability on the offensive end to be connectors and to knock down an open three. And I think that if you're talking about G.G. starting, you're missing the plot, because G.G. Jackson, I think, would be served better if he could get more shots up off the bench, right? Like, that's where I'm at this particular moment. Until he becomes like this great defensive player on Vince Williams Jr. and Marcus Smart's level, I don't think he needs to be with the starting lineup, because the starting lineup has enough scoring as is, has enough gravity as is. I would like the thought process behind G.G. Jackson coming off the bench and being one of your main scorers off the bench, six man type guy, whatever it is. That's more of the thought process you should have with G.G. Jackson, because this core they have is more than capable and more than willing to put up the shots in the starting lineup and more than willing to go get points night to night as they start with Ja, Dez, and Jaren. I don't think G.G. needs to be a part of the plans as a starter until he continues to show more and continues to develop.
Right. It's G.G. Jackson. I think that we can all agree that G.G. has the most potential. He's the prospect with the most potential for the Grizzlies since Ja Morant. I think talent-wise, he could turn into something really special. What he is doing at age of 19, and he really just turned 19 in December, is pretty remarkable. Like, his outside shooting has been a huge surprise, and he's talked about a lot that he's been working on his shooting with his new shooting coach, and that's fantastic. He's also shown some defensive potential, but he's not to the starting level yet there. I think he is going to be best suited as a 7th or 8th guy next year on a true contending team. That being said, there might be moments where it might make sense for him to close games.
Right.
Like, I don't necessarily think it makes sense for him to start, but I could see a scenario where they roll out a closing lineup of Ja, Bane, Vince, G.G., and Jaren.
Yeah.
Like, that closing lineup could be really lethal for you next season. I should just, when you're talking about starting, I think that we've said it many, many times now. Marcus Smart has to get the first shot there. He's a veteran in this league. He's earned it. When he played this season, he was really successful at that position. You've got to see what that looks like. Next in line would be Vince Williams Jr., because he gives you so much benefit on the defensive end. He's really turned into a fantastic playmaker on the offensive end.
And he's
an efficient scorer. He's not going to take shots away from your best guys. He fits into the starting lineup more. When you look at G.G., he's just not necessarily there yet. He's got to do a few more of the dirty work things before he jumps into a starting lineup. That doesn't mean, though, we're not going to see him for 20, 25 minutes a game season as the 7th or 8th guy. Because, to your point, it's going to be his job to come in and put the ball in the basket. That's always going to have to worry about next season. When you turn him into a starter, you're asking him to do a few things that I'm not necessarily sure his skill set is ready for yet. Now, the good news is some defensive metrics have come out about rookies, and he's actually toward the top right. of the rookie defensive metrics. Like I said, he is really showing promise there, but he's 19 years old. There's no rush here with G.G. Jackson, and he can be lethal for you next year off of the bench. Let him come in and just bomb threes.
And in the end of the day, what I'm talking about with him off the bench as opposed to starting is, like, I just think he doesn't have – he will not have the same opportunities if he starts next to Jaw, sure. Jaren, and Bane. It's not that complicated.
And selfishly, I don't want him taking shots away.
Yeah, I don't.
From those
I don't,
guys.
But I don't need him getting a bunch of shots taken away from him when he starts
also,
next
vice
to.
Vice versa. Yeah,
I want him to be off the bench. And if Marcus Smart ends up being that secondary, you know, point guard off the bench, if Vince proves to be a starter in that lineup, I would rather see G.G. Jackson be able to get his game off with a reserve group than have to sort of, bend the knee to Ja, Jaren, and Bane. And like, if I just sort of project what he can be next year, he can be a lethal scorer. But when you put him next to three guys who are going to take a majority of the shots, you're taking shots away from him, and he could potentially take shots away from them. And I just think you'd run into an issue with who's taking shots, when they're taking shots. And I don't think you need to worry about that right now. I don't think you need to try to force that square peg into a round hole at this particular juncture. If the defense comes along, if he shows that he can be more of a connector on the offensive end, if he can start getting other guys involved with his assist, sure. But with Michael Porter Jr. in general, like the comp I've always made, you know, Michael Porter Jr. has never been a connector. He puts up shots consistently, but they only have a couple of main scorers right there. I guess Jokic, but Jokic gets his teammates involved, Jamal Murray. The way the Grizzlies are set up are different. It's completely different. And I think G.G. Jackson would be best served taking a bunch of shots off the bench as opposed to trying to put up shots next to this big three that is already set in stone, that you know is going to start, that you know is going to give you great production.
Right, and if you go back and you look at Michael Porter Jr.'s last game, he took 13 shots, 9 of them were threes, and he had 20 points. Like, that is how they can use G.G. Jackson next season. The only difference will be Michael Porter Jr., of course, is starting for the Denver Nuggets, but he's a better defender than G.G. is right now, and he's about the same level of rebounder. That's another thing that G.G.'s been surprising with, is his activity on the rebounding, on the board. So, the good news is that G.G. Jackson is a true find. He can be something special in this league, and he is showing potential at the age of 19 that, again, I'm not sure we've seen in a Grizzlies uniform since a guy like Ja Morant. That being said, you don't have to rush this along, especially right. with a team like this. In a weird way, having a true contending team next season and G.G. being involved in that is going to do wonders for his development naturally. You don't need to force him into this starting lineup, especially when you're going into such a crucial season for the Memphis Grizzlies. It feels like you have to make something happen next year with everything that's gone on. A lost season this year, but you found Vince Williams Jr., you found G.G. Jackson. So let them be a part of the rotation next year, but you don't have to make them a focal point. Just let them be a weapon for you next year when you get all your best guys back.
There's always this tendency to want to throw all your best offensive players into the starting lineup, but that's not how life works all the time. Like, I just think that sometimes you need to worry about the lineups you're going to throw out there when Ja's off the floor, when Desmond Bane is off the floor. You
right.
need to worry about those things a little bit more. That's where you win ball games, right? You don't want to lose all the minutes when you put your bench group in there. And I think G.G. Jackson could go a long way to helping you win those minutes off of the bench heading into next year. We'll see how it continues to progress. But I love what I'm seeing from him. Again, 22.7 rebounds, 4-for-8 from three. I mean, at 19 years old, it's just unreal to see what he's already become. No one thought his rookie year, as soon as he got in here, that he'd be able to do this. But you get some opportunities. You see what he can do against NBA competition and good NBA competition last night with the Kings. And you see how phenomenal he could be and how big he could be for this team going into the future.
Yeah, Sean Coleman, actually friend of the program, put it out there on Twitter. I highly recommend going to look at it. But his shooting splits against winning records in the NBA, tremendous. He's shooting 36% from three. I think he has a 58% true shooting percentage. So he is showing the ability to get stuff done, not just against the bottom feeders of the NBA, but he's also doing it against pretty good competition. Again, though, that being said, doesn't mean you have to throw him into the starting lineup. If you really look at it, the Grizzlies this season, going into the season, we were even talking about, the bench unit isn't what it used to be. It used to be such a strength of the Memphis Grizzlies when you would have that bench unit come in and they could maintain things because you had Kyle Anderson, Melton, Tyus Jones, Brandon Clark, that group of guys. when you look at it now and the potential for the bench unit next year, it's starting to shape into something that can be really effective. And if G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams Jr., Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, Santi Aldama, and whoever else you bring in are going to be a part of that bench unit, that's starting somewhere where you can be really effective. So I don't want to take him away from that unit to try to force him into a starting lineup when it may not make 100% sense.
Yep. Now, another truth from last night is I've been here for a while, but last night is another example of in the West when you have Jokic and you have Domantas Sabonis, and if you ever have to go and play Joel Embiid in the East and guys like that, you need somebody else. You need a starting five next to Jaren. Two rebounds last night, and Domantas Sabonis just gets the best of him because he is a very physical player. He had 18 rebounds last night.
Beats the hell out of people.
25 points. He beats the hell out of everybody, but it does show a need outside of Jaren Jackson, where you can't just throw Jaren Jackson out there at the five consistently and ask him to cover guys like that, because I don't think you're maximizing what he can be. He could get into foul trouble, which is very concerning against a guy like Domantas Sabonis, who's going to take it at him constantly. He may get overwhelmed with power. He's not going to rebound very well against those guys. You need a starting five next to him. And who knows? Who knows who that could be? You know, we'll see what Brandon Clark looks like next to him. Michael Wallace on the pregame show last night gave a hint, hint, wink, wink. Hey, next Wednesday could be the return of Brandon Clark
very
against
exciting.
The Lakers.
Very
I want to see that, and I think most people want to see that. There is a need for Jaren to have somebody who can body up against the likes of Domantas Sabonis and Nikola Jokic here in the West. It's not that complicated to understand. You see, Rudy Gobert is another example with the Timberwolves. You need somebody who can body up against that guy, and you don't want that to be Jaren. I don't think you're maximizing Jaren as a player if you ask him to do that constantly.
Right.
Now, when we get to closing lineups and you talk about a game up in the balance, you know, maybe having Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. on the floor at the same time, maybe that's great. And maybe Jaren could just be the five that finishes out games in those situations.
Exactly.
But you need somebody for 25 minutes a game, similar to Steven Adams, who is
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Just going to take that brute force and give fouls and keep Jaren out of those situations. You just need that constantly. You need someone who's going to rebound at a higher level.
Absolutely. Last week when I was doing Jason and John, Anthony Sane came on and we were talking about that exact conversation. And we were saying, you know, Sane's point, which I fully agree with, is you're not necessarily looking for a starting center that's going to be playing your fourth quarters. You're really looking for somebody that can come in for three quarters, do the dirty work, and then you're going to probably close with Jaren at the five, depending on the game situation. You can have Brandon Clark there at the four. You could have G.G. Jackson in there at the four if you would want to, depending on the matchups. You're really looking for somebody to come in for three quarters, do the dirty work, bang around, and let Jaren float, get his game off,
yes,
and be the defensive quarterback that he has been many a times for us in the past. So you're not looking for somebody that's going to close games. And as we've seen in the past, really, for instance, with Steven Adams, which for some reason everybody keeps forgetting, you couldn't play him in the playoffs. Jaren in the playoff scenarios will probably be your closing center at the five. He's just going to have to be with the way that the playoffs run, the matchups, all that stuff. Just even look at the Timberwolves. Rudy Gobert,
quite frankly,
it's going to get weird
okay.
for him in the playoffs.
That's okay.
No, it's perfectly fine. So that's why, you know, the suggestion of a guy like Drummond has been thrown around. I wouldn't mind Drummond. He can come in, bang around. He'd only cost like $3 million, hopefully. That's what he costs right now.
Well,
I think he may have
boosted up his value a little bit, but it depends on what he wants to take. He's on the back end of
it. But you're really looking for somebody to come in for three quarters, three and a half quarters, bang around, get those rebounds, play good defense, set screens, and then you let Jaren close out the game at the five because you probably need some more offense at that moment. And that's really what the Grizzlies are looking for. To be quite honest, I'm getting close to being set on I want Klingon. That guy,
right.
Every single time I watch him play, I'm just like, oh my God. I try to imagine him next to Jaren Jackson Jr. as a five for the Grizzlies, and I think he'd be really effective. And the foot stuff doesn't bother me as much. It's not bone injury. It's more muscle, which ligament stuff, which you feel better about. So that's why I've always thought the draft is where they're going to find that five that can come in, do the dirty work next to Jaren, and then he'll close out the games.
Here's the thing that I think people are ignoring. When they talk about Jaren at the five, you know, the defensive ability he had last year and the blocks that he had and why he won Defensive Player of the Year, he averaged three blocks a game last year. He's had some spike games. Hell, he had four last night. And, like, he still can do those things. But majority of this year, he has played without a natural starting five next to him, and he's had to take on that work.
He's had to anchor more.
And his block numbers are down to 1.6 per game. When you have a natural five next to him who can sort of stand around the hoop and do these things, he can roam a little bit more,
yes,
and he can do a lot more on the defensive end. I think that's the biggest thing in the heart of games. Not the closing lineups, but in the heart of games, he can be an eraser at the rim a lot easier if you have someone like Donovan Klingon or Steven Adams or these guys who you trust being a secondary rim protector. He can do a lot more on the defensive end. If you unlock another sort of tier defensively with Jaren Jackson Jr. if you have a natural five playing next to him.
Absolutely.
And we saw that last year. It's very clear. Last 2 years, quite frankly.
Yeah, he's the quarterback of your defense, but he's also most effective when he is able to roam. But this season, he's had to anchor down more in the paint. And the good news is that he's been able to do that without fouling a lot, which definitely shown signs of growth there. So that's tremendous to see from Jaren Jackson Jr. But he is most effective when he is able to roam, because I think a weird conversation that's happening like within NBA Twitter is people talking about Defensive Player of the Year, and it's because Wimby is just completely warping any numbers we've ever seen. What he's doing right now is we're all screwed. But like that's a different conversation. But Jaren, one of the reasons he won Defensive Player of the Year last year, it's not just because the block numbers and steal numbers were way up there, which they were. It was because he was able to defend so many different positions, and he could defend you on the perimeter.
Yes.
That is where Jaren Jackson Jr. is so valuable. He can step out on the perimeter and defend a guard, and that is why he was Defensive Player of the Year.
But you're taking away from his game.
You're taking
when
that
when he has to park himself into the paint.
When he's got to park himself in the paint.
Next to DeMontis Sabonis the
whole
game.
Getting elbowed in the ribs. Like, son of a bitch. Like,
You're taking, but I think if you don't have that natural five next to him, you just take away a part of his game that makes him so valuable.
Right.
That makes him so damn valuable. Just let go of the rebounding. Let go of all that. Somebody else can come in and do that. And I still think there are a lot of people out there that talk too much about what Jaren isn't and don't focus on what he is.
Jaren's also still 24.
Yes. Well, that whole thing. Yeah.
I think he's been tremendous this year. I don't understand.
I think he's been awesome this
trying to poke holes in his game. I think that Jaren, he has given you.
And it's 100%. Kind of funny.
Every single night he gives you full effort
on
a team that he knows he's not going to be winning most of these games, and he's coming out and playing his ass off. And he's getting better.
In my opinion, Connor, he's not in a position, he's not in his natural element. He's being asked to do some things that are outside what you should be asking him to do as a player.
Yeah.
And he's still giving you a whole lot. And he's created more on the offensive end from an assist standpoint. I think this is his highest assist total all his entire career. Like, he's getting his teammates involved a whole lot more out of necessity. Like, he's learning some things along the way, but I think the way he's being played, the way he has had to play because of all the injuries and Steven Adams being gone and all this, I think the way you're asking him to play is just not what you want to do going into the future.
His ISO scoring is extremely exciting. Like, what he's been able to do off of the dribble and the matchup nightmare that he's really begun to lean into is extremely exciting because he is 24th in the NBA right now in points per game. I know it's only 22.4, but then when you think about, oh, that's going to be next to Ja Morant, Desmond Bane next year as well, you're going to have basically three all-stars in that start, all-star level players. Desmond Bane is playing at an all-star level, just didn't get in, of course, because of the Grizzlies' record this year. It's going to be tough for him to get in the next few seasons just because it's stacked in the West. But you're going to have three all-star level guys in that starting lineup next year, and I really think that we haven't even seen the peak of Jaren Jackson Jr. And the past two seasons, he's really put this team on his back in a lot of ways, has gone out there, he's been a professional, he's leading by example, and I really do think that all these minutes and all these positions he's been getting thrown into are going to pay off in the long run for the Grizzlies. He has evolved his game so much in the last year and a half. Since Ja Morant really kind of went down last season, Jaren Jackson Jr. has stepped up and become something different on the offensive end. He's evolved his game, and it's going to lead to winning games for the Grizzlies next season.
Now, elsewhere in the NBA last night, I have nothing else to talk about besides Ant Edwards over John Collins.
Good God.
I mean, the block, was it last week where he hit his head on the rim to end the game, was nuts. I just think we're starting to understand, like, the level of athlete he really is. What he did to John Collins is illegal in most of the free world.
John Collins might have to retire.
I can't even. I mean, he was the ball was a foot over John Collins' hand, and John Collins is not an unathletic person. And he's been really, he's in his career been okay at times at being a rim protector. And Ant Edwards took off from so far away from the rim. I can't get over that dunk. That was nasty.
It's the dunk of the year.
Yeah, no questions asked about it. And the Timberwolves went on to win 114-104, but I don't care if they won or lost last night. That was going to be the story of that game. He is, and it does sort of show me, like, as much as we talk about the dunk contest and trying to make NBA All-Star Weekend better, we have the talent to go make it better. They just have to compete in it. They have to want to compete.
Yeah, but the best dunks of, I will say, the best dunks of Ja and Ant and even Zion, you need someone running up and trying to block it. That maybe that's what they do. You should put, like, the best defender, but no defender is going to sign up to get slammed on.
Rudy, you think Rudy Gobert is going to sign up? Victor Wembanyama's going to sign up?
Maybe a G League guy? Just have the G League players come in.
They get to run from under the hoop and try to go block Ja Morant at the rim. That's not a fun
like
job.
Back in the day of Gladiators.
How much are you
going to
pay them? That's a real question.
For real.
You'd have to pay the hell out of those guys under the rim. But I mean, there's the talent to go make it happen.
Sure.
In the dunk contest,
really,
as we have in the past, but they have to participate.
If you're John Collins, you got put in concussion protocol because another dude's dangling hit you in the forehead so hard when he was dunking on you. How can you ever? I mean, you'd have to retire. I'd be like, oh, this is it for me.
And it's already been
and the picture is so bad. He's like down.
Since the finger and everything with John Collins with the Hawks, his career has gone downhill.
Another dude's piece put you in concussion protocol.
Do you think last night is the low point for John Collins' career? to date? Somebody tell me that. I want to know.
It's a tough scene.
Know what I saw last night? Our good friend Anthony Sane, friend of the show, who comes on Jason and John every week. He actually posed something pretty interesting to make the dunk contest a little better. He said one-on-one, $5 million to the winner, some type of incentive, Anthony Edwards versus Ja Morant. If you could somehow convince both of them to do it, that would be a fun dunk contest.
It would. If you could get Zion involved, too.
Well, Zion said he'd get involved, right? It was a couple weeks ago where he said he's just got to be in the All-Star game and he'll participate.
Yeah. Real quick, we don't have to get into it. Shout out to Zion for the weight loss. And the way he's been playing the back half of the season. Really is committed to himself. And the Pelicans, something dangerous. You don't want to mess with the Pelicans. They are a very talented team. And Zion's been playing probably the best ball of his career. I just think he went through a lot, and we were even talking about it, but it seems like he's committed to his health, and he is playing the best basketball of his career. He's been extremely healthy, and it's been fun to see. It really has been.
Between 4 and 8 in the Western Conference, and obviously, like, there's guys that can play themselves in the play-in, play themselves out of the play-in, into the top 6 seeds. It's going to be a wild ride the rest of the way in the West. You have the Clippers through the Suns, who are at 8. You have them all separated. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams separated by 3.5 games. And then even, like, the Kings played themselves into the 6th spot, but they're only a half game ahead of the Mavs and the Suns, who are 7 and 8 in the Western Conference. And it's kind of funny. The Lakers and the Warriors have not made up any ground.
Well, and then the news today from the Lakers.
I think it's most likely, yeah, and like Christian Wood, Jared Vanderbilt, who else is going to be out for the year?
Gabe Vincent, which has been obviously. Yeah.
But like the Lakers and the Warriors, I think the way it's playing out, Lakers and Warriors are going to be stuck at 9 and 10.
Probably.
Trying to play themselves.
Because I don't know if the Rockets are going to catch them.
And then it's going to be Pelicans, Kings, Mavs, Suns all fighting for that 6th spot so they don't have to be in the play.
Yeah, like the Rockets are on a 5-game winning streak and they're still 3 games back. It's going to be tough for them to jump into it.
Yeah, I don't think
so. I mean, it depends though. The Lakers might bottom out. I'd be surprised if they did, but.
Well, the Lakers bottoming out, you can't. I don't know if you can look at the news drop today and say they're going to bottom out. You still have LeBron and Anthony Davis,
I think, just because he's so important to their defense.
But you still have LeBron and Anthony.
You still have LeBron and Anthony.
That's the biggest thing.
Yes, as long as you're not playing
Austin Reeves,
Sabonis.
Rui, all their main pieces are still healthy.
Yes, as long as you don't play Sabonis, AD is going to be great.
Yeah, but the Warriors lost again last night to the Knicks. They have to get something going quick if they want any semblance of playoff basketball to go their way. They do not look good. I thought when they moved Klay to the bench, I thought it was going to be like a little bit of staying power. The Wiggins stuff popped up. Yeah, but Wiggins is back now. And I guess they're still putting Klay Thompson off the bench, but it hasn't come to fruition for them. The Lakers and the Warriors are the teams where it's like they win one, lose one, and they may win a big game, and you feel like they're heading in the right direction, and then they lose to one of the worst teams in the NBA, and you're like, okay, no, they're not. They're just so flaky at this point, which, to be honest with you, night to night in an 82-game season, there should be no surprise there when you have some of the oldest players in the NBA.
Yeah, Klay has been good off the bench, though.
He has been solid. He's been solid. Even at 18 points last night, 5 for 10 from 3, but they did lose 119-112. To the Knicks. But it shouldn't be that much of a surprise with how much older talent they have on their rosters that they are kind of flaky and on and off. They're hot and cold down the stretch of an 82-game season.
Right.
That should be understood. But we'll see what they do. We'll see what they do. But the Western Conference is going to be absolutely nuts.
It's going to be fun.
Down the final stretch. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. And after the break, we have some Tigers to talk about. And not only do we have some Tiger basketball to talk about with recruiting targets and everything else, but Memphis football! Started spring practice, so I'll tell you what I'm expecting, what I need answered by the time we get to the end of spring for Memphis football. We'll do that next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Now, we know that the Memphis basketball season is over, 22-10. They're not going to play in the NIT. But with that, there's a focus here on recruiting. And here's the thing I will say about the NIT and everything else and the denial. I am actually, I have been talked into. I'm glad that they have denied this because ultimately Penny Hardaway has to build a program here and he has to build a team going into next year. And having all the time in the world that he can possibly spend to go recruit these guys on the open market, I think is the best way forward. You have to get this team all figured out by June or July so they have more time together, they have more time to mesh, so you don't run into the issues you had last year. And with that, I think he just has more of a singular focus on getting guys from the transfer portal and recruiting at the highest of levels. Now, we already mentioned Doug McDaniel is a guy that he's focusing on in the transfer portal. A guy from Michigan, 16 points per game, 36% from three. On the defensive end, he can get some knockaways and some steals. But he is very much singularly focused on trying to find a point guard of the future, trying to find a point guard that has more consistency than what he had last year in Javon Quinterly. Two more guys that he has reached out to, according to sources out there on the Twitter sphere. One is Arturo Dean. Arturo Dean from Florida International, 5'11", 163. Not a big guy by any stretch of the imagination. But Arturo Dean at Florida International, he's a sophomore going on his junior year, so he has two more years of eligibility. 13.4 points per game, 5 rebounds per game at 5'11", 4 assists per game. A little higher on the turnover numbers. But the biggest thing about Arturo Dean that does give me hope that Penny Hardaway is sort of learning and understanding what he needs to bring in. You know what Arturo Dean did better than anybody in the country last year? He was the NCAA steals leader last year. That is something that has to be focused on. You have to find defensive players that really understand your system. And Penny Hardaway talked about that after the game against Wichita State. This team that he had this year was way too offensively focused. They didn't want to guard. He wants to switch that around in a big, big way. The other name that he brought up that has been brought up out there is Jacoby Gillespie. He's a sophomore as well, two more years of eligibility. He is from Belmont. Now, he's a lot better scorer than Arturo Dean. 17 points per game, pretty solid from the three-point stripe. He's gotten better, at least. I say solid. He can put them up, but he was 29% his freshman year, and then this year, for Belmont, 38.7%. But he's a better scorer, 3.8 rebounds per game, 4.2 assists per game. His field goal percentage for a guy who's 5'11", or 6'1", 180 is pretty high, 56% from the field. But with him, I mean, you just sort of look at his shooting splits, 56% from the field, 39% from three, 83% from the line, and he also plays some good defense. This is a guy that I think they really should focus on, a really good perimeter defender. He can get in your face, he can get knockaways and make some things happen. But what is becoming increasingly clear, at least in the first few days of the transfer portal, is that Penny Hardaway and this staff want to find a point guard who can lead this thing in the right direction and play some defense. They want to find a guy who can be more consistent than what they had last year in Javon Quinterly. And maybe a guy that's a little bit more impressionable, a guy that they can sort of work with, as opposed to a guy who was in his fifth year in Javon Quinterly, who probably felt as if what he knew and what he had accomplished was already the best. I think that these guys are a little more impressionable and will come in here with a better attitude, better set of skills, coachability than what he had last year in Javon.
Yeah, it's kind of like we said yesterday. You're looking for more A-Lows and less JQs.
Yes, very much.
Fewer.
Fewer. Also, we're going to have to sort of look what he does around the edges, because they're going to have to recruit more than a point guard.
Dirty work.
Right now, right now you're looking at the only two returning guys are going to be Nick Jourdain and potentially Ashton Hardaway. We don't even know how that's going to play out ultimately. So he's going to have to go get some small forwards, a big. He's going to have to find some different things as well, but we'll keep up with that. I do want to give a shout-out and a congrats to David Jones, who they hope will return. But he was honorable mention All-American this year, 21.8 points per game, 7.6 rebounds per game, 2.2 steals per game. He was very, very good this year. Did he turn the ball over a little bit too much? Sure, but he was the guy you could count on just about every game to show up and show out and play with a little bit of heart consistently. So David Jones getting there is nice. Also on the AP All-American teams, it is interesting to see he didn't get on the first three teams. I don't know if I'm going to call it a snub, though, because it's similar to how we talked about with all-conference teams. The more you win, the fact if you're in the NCAA tournament, you have more of a likelihood to be on these teams. First team, Zach Edey was the unanimous on the first team. That makes a lot of sense. He'll probably win player of the year. But then you had Dalton Knecht, very deserved. Jamal Shedd from Houston, very deserved. RJ Davis from North Carolina, quite deserved. Tristan Newton from UConn, very, very deserved. And then in the second team, Tyler Kolick from Marquette, Mark Sears from Alabama, Deron Holmes, the second from Dayton, Kyle Filipowski from Duke, and then Hunter Dickinson from Kansas. I thought these were fine. I think there's a lot of people that wanted to see David Jones get a nod for the first three teams, but hey, it wasn't in the cards this year. It wasn't in the cards. Their success by the end of the season did not lend itself to being on the...
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Those top three teams, but to get an honorable mention All-American nod, that means something. That is big. That is big for David Jones. Now on to Memphis football, starting spring practice today. Now I'd imagine they're not in pads. They're probably just got the helmets on and they're just running around a little bit in shorts and in a jersey, whatever it is. But there's a lot of things that I'm curious about heading into this season. I do think that they have aced the offseason, Connor. We've talked about it on several occasions. What they've done in the transfer portal is phenomenal. They've added a bunch of offensive linemen. You know, you look at Kedrell Lewis, who started at Louisiana Monroe for a while. I think he has upwards of 20 to 30 starts. A guy like Trent Holler, he was a starter at center for Marshall for some years. He has upwards of 20 or 30 starts. They've done a good job there. Brought in a kicker, brought in a punter, brought in some help on the defensive line, brought in some help in the defensive backfield, brought in our guy Mario Anderson Jr. in the backfield to replace the Blake Watson production. And now you have him and Sutton Smith. What I like about that backfield in particular is you have the in-between-the-tackles banger and Mario Anderson Jr., who's really hard to take down. He's going to make you miss by going right through you. And then you have Sutton Smith, who is very, very fun to watch. We saw that in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. When you get him into open space, scheme him into open space, get him off tackle, let him get outside of the tackle box, he is very hard to take down, and he's very shifty. So you have that sort of thunder and lightning combo there in the backfield that I think could be very successful going into next year. I guess my biggest question, it's sort of copy and paste always, is what is the O-line actually going to look like? You brought in some guys. I mentioned Trent Holler. I mentioned Kedrell Lewis that have started a lot of games, but how do they actually fit into this system, right? That's the biggest thing that you need to pay attention to. I think Trent Holler will be fine. He's a guy who has a lot of familiarity with Tim Kramsey. He was recruited by Tim Kramsey when he was at Marshall, so that's what ultimately led him to the University of Memphis. So he's familiar with the concepts and the wording, so I think it'll be a pretty easy transition for him. Kedrell Lewis is a little different. He comes from outside of the program. How does he actually fit in? And then, like, I just sort of look down the line. There's one guy in particular that really catches my eye, and it's not that, you know, I feel as if he's going to be phenomenal immediately, but he's a little bit of a wild card. There's a guy they brought in by the name of Jalen Nichols, and he's coming from South Carolina. He's going to be a fifth-year guy. He tore his ACL in preseason camp last year, but he was in line to be the starting left tackle at an SEC program in South Carolina. If he's back healthy, if he's comfortable, that could be a great addition to play one of the tackle spots. If he ended up playing left tackle, replacing Mekhi'lan Pounders, you'd feel okay about that. But he's got to show that he's coming off of that ACL injury and he's comfortable. But in fact, I mean, the truth of the matter is if you can start and you were a projected starter for an SEC program, you should be pretty good in the AAC ultimately.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I am also very curious to see what is said about the defense, because I think that last year it was very interesting that during spring camp and all of that we were hearing about, oh, the defense is so improved, they're going to end up pacing the offense. And then, of course, we got into the season and we saw very quickly, oh, no, the defense is not up to snuff where they should possibly be. So I'm really excited to see what the new defensive coordinator can do and what that defense looks like and what we hear
now,
about it.
I'll say this. I think, but I mean, this is partly based on the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. I think they're going to be a good run defense.
It certainly looked better.
I think that's going to be, that much is very clear. Yeah, you lost Jalen Allen, who was probably your best pass rusher. But when you look at what they bring back, Cormonte Hamilton, you have Keviante Spears, you have Jara Anderson, guys that played a lot last year that will be in the middle of that defensive line. And then you brought in P.J. Lucas from Indiana, who is a run stuffer, huge 330-pound frame. He's going to be a big space eater. Mon Cole from Holmes Community College, similar type skill set. And then your linebacking core, I think, is the best that you've had in a while, at least your off-ball linebackers. We already know about Chandler Martin. He was first-team all-conference last year. But then you bring in another guy from Arkansas State who was a freshman who has three more years of eligibility, their linebacker Javonte Mackey. He had 84 tackles last year as a freshman, and he's only going to be a sophomore. When you talk about Javonte Mackey and Chandler Martin next to each other, as long as Javonte Mackey can get brought along, I think this run defense will be great. All of the real questions for me are on the back end. What does that look like? They still, as well as they play defense, as well as they stopped the run in that AutoZone Liberty Bowl, 0 yards rushing, they did give up 440 yards passing. Now, I understand that Iowa State had to do some different things, and they had to put the ball in the air a whole lot. but you're going to need to limit those things as you get into conference season and everything else. And they've done some things around the edges. They have a lot of guys that are coming back. Davion Ross will be returning off injury. You're still going to have Greg Rubin back there. You're bringing a guy from Old Dominion who has a lot of experience in Tajrael. Hopefully they can get it together, but that's going to be a copy and paste question based on what we saw last year with that secondary. They have to improve. They have to improve because there still will be some teams in conference that see all that film from last year and try to bomb over top. We saw North Texas take advantage of it. We saw other teams take advantage of it as well.
Yeah, because I think that we're pretty confident that you're going to have a pretty good offense, if not a great offense, yes, especially with the guys that are coming back. So you just need the defense to match it.
I mean, I have no holdups about the offense besides the offensive line.
Which
I mean,
is still improved.
I mean, when they have tight ends returning and Anthony Lanfear, you feel okay about that. But then Seth Hennigan, Rock Taylor, and Demir Blankensee. Here.
With the backfield.
Here you go. And in the backfield, you have two guys that you feel really good about, that Thunder and Mario Anderson Jr., Lightning, and Sutton Smith. I love their skill players. I love their skill players.
Do you think this is the most talented team of Ryan's era so far?
I think it's where talent has also met experience.
Okay.
I think that's where it puts it over the top. I think it is the most talented team he's had, but the experience it's being met with as well. I mean, you have Rock Taylor, who's been here for, this will be his fourth year. Seth Hennigan, fourth year. He just turned 21, by the way. That's absolutely insane. But he did start his true freshman year. Demir Blankensee going on year two, even though he caught for 800 yards in year one. You're just meeting that talent with experience, and I think that makes all the difference. And that's why this team's going to be picked at the top of the AAC. I don't know what other team you'd pick at the top of the AAC going
right
into next year.
Seems like a fair expectation, too.
I mean, Tulane, maybe? South Florida? No. I you can't do that. The roster retention, the ability that they have shown on the transfer portal to fill in the cracks, what they've done in hiring a GM and bringing in Jordan Hankins, a defensive coordinator, I think everything is leading us to believe it's going to be a good year. I do still think that it is kind of funny to think about the range of outcomes heading into next year.
Yes.
I know a lot of shows have talked about that. The range of outcomes could be you win conference, have a chance to get in the 12-team playoff as the group of five representative, or you could win 7 or 8 games and you're back to square one and Ryan's back on the warm seat, back on the hot seat.
Am I crazy to think that 10 wins in the conference championship is a fair expectation?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm crazy to think that?
That is the expectation.
Yeah, okay.
You're not crazy for that. You're anti-crazy for that. That's what the expectation should be. And I think most people in that facility would tell you the exact same thing. It is a great time to be over there in that facility. You have the renovations getting done on Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. You have a new state-of-the-art practice facility. You have more talent than you've had in a while. You're dealing with more NIL money than a lot of the teams in your conference. It's just a good time. It's a good time, and they need to take advantage of it. And if you don't take advantage of it, all the eyes, all the fingers start pointing back to Ryan Silverfield, as they were at the beginning of this year. And I still think it's kind of funny, just looking at the two money sports here at the University of Memphis and basketball and football, how much has I don't know if people have really thought about this, the shift in the view of Penny Hardaway and Ryan Silverfield and how that may have sort of flip-flopped based on how the last season has gone.
Certainly.
Like, that has flipped on its head. That has flipped on its head. Now, I still think that, at the drop of the hat, the Fire Ryan Silverfield folks come back out, and it's harder for the Fire Penny folks to climb out of their hole. But at the same time, the expectations around this football program are exceeding the basketball program, and that's pretty rare. I haven't really seen that besides the Tubby era. You know what I mean? That's sort of what we were looking at. So we'll see what happens going into next year, but they started spring practice today, and I'm curious what it will look like by the time we get to the spring game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.